Anu Oluwapu Aziz here. This is my official podcast, Everything to Say, More to Know. And it has truly been a really long time. So you're probably wondering, what does Anu have to say in reference to Everything to Say, More to Know? Well, the conversation that we're going to have today is regarding depression, mental illness, but particularly the slump that depression puts you in, especially within the time frame that we're currently all existing in. Quarantine, you know, the C word, you know, the V, axe word, you know, all these things that will naturally want to make a person unalive themselves. Well, this is going to be one podcast I feel like people can truly learn from, because my journey with depression is something that is really personal to me, and it's something that I have thankfully not have experienced for more than 3 years, and I'm able to say it's because of the things that I've learned that I'll be sharing with you in this podcast is what has kept me sane. Okay? So, the topics that are going to be discussed here today are, one, my experience. And I want to give a disclaimer saying that I'm not necessarily going to be talking about anything in grave detail, because realistically, my experience with depression hasn't been morbid in the least. But thoughts, suicidal ideation are things that I will be talking about very briefly. But if that word triggers you by any means, click out. But I'm here to tell you that the reality of this world isn't given in trigger warnings. And the reality is also that life is already too real, which is why these thoughts pop up in our head. Life is already too real. So please cherish yourself enough to know that you can get out of this. And you will get out of this when you put the work in and you realize that you're here for a reason. The next thing I'll be talking about is the definition of depression and how it's triggered. I'm going to be also speaking about the emotions associated with depression and what is often confused with depression, the different types of depression, the importance of labels, the conversation needed when talking about antidepressant usage, mental illness jokes, and the memification of depression, healthy coping mechanisms, and how to be a friend to a depressed person. Sorry that I am a little bit jumbled up. I'm a little bit nervous because I haven't recorded in a long time, but needless to say, I'm here for a reason doing it within this time frame, so I'm going to continue. So, my experience with depression. I would say my awareness and ability to perceive and vocalize my depression started at the age of 16 to 17. I remember that me and my mom were in a nail salon and we're getting our nails done. And I believe that was the day that Summer was announced. Yeah, in May time. This was the day that Summer was announced. And I remember it was such a sunny day. And I was like to my mom, I think I have seasonal depression. And she's just like, oh, that's why you're feeling that way. And I really sat with it, because the sun, as a Black person especially, is so vital for how we feel. Because I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not supposed to be in Canada. I'm not supposed to be experiencing these different altitudes of nature to this degree. This is not for my phenotype. It's not for me. So when I became aware of that and realizing how important the sun was, I started to cherish summers more. I started to be out more. I started to do things more by myself, because I really enjoy doing things that make me happy, but especially within the sun. Especially with the sun. However, I started to develop clinical depression But I started to develop clinical depression when I was trying to uphold certain standards within society. And this began for me after high school, which is when I was entering university, when I started to expand my friend group, when I started to realize things like trying to get a good job was important, trying to have a good image relatively on social media can help me further progress my awareness of what I need and what I could attain and what I could get. Like, I felt like I was putting myself through so much pressure that I was folding. I'm not afraid to admit that the gap between high school and entering university was when I snapped. And I wonder if, people don't talk about this. People don't talk about being thrown outside of your safety net of school and being told that, hey, you're a now consenting adult and you're going to be able to establish yourself so well because of the tools we gave you have sustained you so far. But the systems in which you're placed in do not operate within the same contexts of the sheltering we got in school. And I, for one, was someone that was quite sheltered. Sheltered in the sense that I had a lot of knowledge of a lot of things, but I didn't have the experience to match. So being that I was sheltered in school and sheltered at home, but had all this knowledge, it was time for me to apply it. And being around certain people, being in a newfound bond, being in university, not to mention, I, ironically, entered school the same way we all entered quarantine. We were told randomly one day, hey, school's gonna be on strike. And we're just like, huh? We all just got into school. Why is our school gonna be on strike? And I literally had 5 weeks to myself with all these books, being told that we couldn't go to school because there's a strike going on. Not only was I confused, not only did I not know what to do with myself, but I feel like in that beginning time was definitely the hallmarker of my feelings. Feeling so out of control is definitely what breeds depression a lot of the time. And I will go into further analysis later in the podcast. But a particular day that really made me understand that something was not okay within me. The recording was previously cut off. However, I'm going to continue from this point forward. So, I remember this time period, I went on a friend date with one of my mutuals from a long time. And this is the first time that I'm meeting this person in real life, despite the fact that we had quite expressive form of love for each other online. So it wasn't weird or nothing. I'd be meeting people every now and then, and we'd be mutuals for a very long time. So real life don't be changing nothing. So this day, me and her hung out, and I was smoking on hybrid. And for all the weed smokers, you know that whether it's indica dominant or sativa dominant or whether it's equal, it matters. But within this case, it was equally on the spectrum of indica, where I'm really invested in my environment. Whereas with sativa, I was also quite aware of the thoughts that were existing within my brain. And I already knew that I wasn't happy. I was actively communicating this to my friends. And at the same time, I was also actively ensuring that I surrounded myself with people as much as being aware within myself and by myself of how I'm feeling too. So this day, I was excited to be outside. But anywho, it didn't really like dawn on me that I was sad until we went out to go get some food. And I remember this definitely wasn't the first time that I had suicide ideation. However, I would say the context of this was definitely scary because, one, in all technicality, this was the second time I had suicide ideation. So when I say it wasn't the first time, I really mean, like, I don't think about these things. This is not something that comes across my mind unless I'm quite literally thinking about death on the entire spectrum, which is the fact that death is always going to come to us. People around us are always going to die. Matter of fact, we're not here to waste time. We're here to live. So I'm hyper aware of the fact that I'm here to live my life. I'm here to be good and happy. And death could really come knocking on my door at any second. But within this context, this is not thoughts that come through my head. This is not something that me, Anu, feels naturally or really much ever. So I vocalized this to my friend. It's like, I think weed makes me depressed. And she's just like, to me, then you need to stop smoking weed. And I'm just like, no, it can't be the weed. Because one thing about any addition that you add to your psyche, which is drugs, you know for a fact that whatever you're feeling is going to be heightened. So I became hyper aware that whatever I'm feeling right now is something that's been locked inside of me, and I was getting really good at deceiving myself. And I was like, no, I can't do this. No. So the next day, I remember my mom comes back home and I was sitting on the couch. I was really, like, taking in, like, I was basically, that entire day, like, afterwards, I was literally battling within myself, like, do I say something, do I not say something, do I say something, do I not, as what depression will make you go through. Yes, it will make you ruminate. I'll speak about that further later. It will make you do things that you know is right, but you'll question it 1,000 times. But anywho, my mom comes in, and she's like, hey, Anu, how are you? And from that point forward, I just broke down. I just said everything of how I feel about everything. And prior to this breakdown, I was already deactivated from Twitter. No, I don't think from Twitter. Actually, no. Yes, from Twitter and from Instagram. I was already doing the protocol of, I don't feel good, I need to tend to me. But once again, the tending to me was not within the context of somebody that's trying to heal. It's from somebody that's literally stuck. I was stuck. So that breakdown further emphasize that I'm not okay. And then after that, when I realized I'm not okay, that week, I had a horrible, horrible, horrible headache. I could not. It was humanly impossible for me to get up and look at the bright light outside of me and not feel like I was a fucking vampire. Like, it was so bad, I could not even look at light. I literally had to sleep on the floor with my mom because she took in, like, my body was literally breaking down. Like, my body, my mind, and my soul was, like, knocking on my door, like, Anu, something's wrong, Anu, something's wrong, Anu, something's wrong. So my body did the whole, like, do-do-do-do-do. Like, you know, like, when you're literally falling down the stairs, like, accidentally, of course. Like, my body was purposely putting me through this so I could recognize that shit is not okay. And so, that following weekend, I went to the doctor, and basically he was just like, okay, you're going to do this test. This questionnaire is part of the diagnostic statistic manual, which helps to categorize the severity of someone's concerns. And in this case, I was doing the questionnaire for depression. So I was sitting there with my mom. My doctor went out the room. I was crying and I was answering it. But I was crying out of, one, sadness, because I feel like
something has to change. But also I was crying because I was happy because something has to change. So it's like, it's bittersweet. When you get used to something, it literally feels like a hunch in you. So I was crying for both reasons. And what was concerning to me was like, I was literally putting almost every day for majority of the questions. And I believe there's like 26 questions. And my doctor comes in, he calculates the questions. The only thing I didn't do as almost every day was literally the idea of wanting to unalive myself. Because that only came like once or twice. So I couldn't really say that. Like that's literally, like that one question was a determining factor of me being 2 points away from having major depression completely. Like, I was literally 2 points away from completely having major depression. I still was diagnosed with major depression. It's just that, it's the fact that I was on the severe spectrum, but it was just one thing qualifying me as being a little bit more sane, even though, like, I don't really believe that the level of disparity that I was feeling was any type of sane. So after that, my doctor prescribed me medication, and naturally I was really like, oh, I don't really want to do that. But inside of me, just like, if this is what's gonna boost me to want to do things I need to do for myself, then so be it. I even forgot to even mention, prior to me breaking down as well, I went outside and wrote in my diary about how I was feeling and how I wanted to change and everything. So naturally, my body was in alignment to the things I was writing, which was in alignment to the things I was saying to people. Like, everything was pointing towards me literally just changing this habit. And with doing that, I recognized that medication at this point in time was going to be a part of the solution. So one thing that I also want to illustrate about my whole like meeting and doctor's appointment in regards to depression is what my doctor even said to me. He was literally just like to me, Anu, make sure you get your self-esteem back up. And that bothered me. Mainly because I thought I was a person that was quite confident. I really did. But one thing's for certain is depression did a number on the way that I perceived myself, at least at that time frame. Like, it really did a number on me. And so I ended up researching the medication before I ingested it. So I allowed myself a couple hours to look this up, see the side effects, see what could possibly happen, all those things. Because realistically, the first 3 days are usually the hardest. You're really tired, really groggy, you're hungry, you don't want to do things, you're irritable, you're annoyed at people. So I'm just like, okay, at least I'm aware that all these things are plausible. And I took it. Those 3 days were definitely horrible, but when I tell you, when that 3 day hit, I felt nothing but euphoria. I remember I literally logged back onto Instagram and just like, hello. And one thing's for certain is you could literally see the light has been put back into me. Like, something inside of me clicked. I was like, no. I absolutely refuse to ever allow myself to get that low again. Like, the medication was definitely an upper, because that's kind of what it is. It's a serotonin SSRI. Yes, SSRI. It's uptake. So my body was able to replenish itself with what it deemed it lacked. And I was able to do things like starting to work out. I literally had everything that I needed to do to feel better. It's just that I was lacking the internal motivation to want to do it, which is what depression does. It literally strips you of everything that makes you want to do things that are good for you. So I started working out again. I started being around people. I started eating more. I started to do things I love to do again. I started to hang out with newer people. I keep saying new things because when you're finally out of that funk, you start to be like, okay, now that I'm no longer in a place to want to miss out, what have I been missing out on? And I feel like I was definitely missing out on being a fucking person. I didn't feel like I was a person. I felt like I was a person that was hospitalized. And the hospital was my own bed. And it was something that I did upon myself. That's how I felt. I felt like I did this upon myself. And as I further get into the rest of the podcast, I'll definitely explain why I felt like I did this upon myself. So let me define depression for everybody now, because that really is what matters most. Once you know what depression is, there's no excuses as to why you're going to misdiagnose yourself or even misdiagnose anybody else. So depression refers to as a mood disorder, which is considered by feelings of sadness, hopelessness, pessimism, lower self-esteem, self-deprecation, loss of ability to take pleasure in ordinary activities, reduced energy and vitality, poor cognitive skills, such as thinking, concentrating, loss of appetite, disturbed sleep, insomnia. So, how exactly is depression triggered? So, family history, generational curses, someone's personality, grief and loss, rejection, stress, the diagnosis of an illness, lack of sleep, rumination, life transitions, and substance abuse. This is a list that I'm going to explain. So as we know, the family history and or generational curses are usually a natural predictor that someone could develop depression. And I say could because your genes do not dictate what happens to you in this life. Your genes predisposition you your genes are the lock and the environment is the key. So if you exist within an environment where the key does not match the lock, you're less likely to experience depression. But if you're living in an environment where the key matches the lock, you are most likely to experience depression. And I add in generational curse because a lot of the time, situations that were placed into within this time period realm of reality, we are often most likely to experience these things because we are not putting ourselves in situations that better our reality. Because naturally, we all know that our upbringing makes it easier for certain beliefs to be spoken onto us because we believe these things. However, our willpower to change our reality is based upon our own choices. So it's not that you have a generational curse that's going to make you disposition to depression. It's your choice to allow yourself to be in certain environments, around certain people, around certain things that might emphasize this disposition. So put yourself in environments where the key does not match the lock. Put yourself in places where people love you, where people respect you, where people honor you. So the next one, personality. So people who naturally victimize themselves, have low self-esteem, are sensitive to criticism, and hold on to stress easily, are most likely to develop depression in this lifetime because depression is
low vibrational. And I say low vibrational because it holds a very low frequency. To depress, you have to compress something. Depression literally compresses you. It makes you go so deep inside of yourself that your own will to come out of depression is your tether. And if you have no form of willpower to pull yourself out of it, then you know what that means. But I'll further explain what I mean by that. But yes, your personality can definitely be an indicator of how depression might embark or showcase itself into your life. So, in terms of grief, grief can manifest into the physical and mental, as grief is often situational and can be attributed to a specific event to which persons learn to cope through. So, with the grief in particular, we all know that grief is often experienced upon things occurring, which is loss of a loved one, loss of a child, loss of a dog. We all experience these things. However, depression is triggered by this because your ability to come out of it is highly dependent on how you view this loss. So we all know that grieving is a process, and grieving can very much be something that is dependent entirely of the way the person allows themselves to let go. So sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's a couple of years. It doesn't matter, but this can easily trigger depression because it kind of forms the natural framework of how depression sits in the body. Rejection can also be a trigger for depression because humans have an essential need to be approved of, needed, affirmed, and accepted by others. We are denied access to approval and excluded from others. We experience a lowering of our self-esteem, especially when an individual has a high rejection sensitivity. Thus, in turn, causes people to isolate themselves as they are under the belief that external behaviors of others is proof of the thoughts occurring in their mind. Okay. Yes, rejection can throw you over the edge because to some people it might seem light, like, oh my god, this person was denied access to this job because their resume doesn't really align with this. If you know the story of the person, and this person very well has been denied constantly, rejected constantly by multiple employers to the point where they have been out of work for 6 months, it's not that they weren't trying, they have been trying, but their self-esteem has been knocked a couple notches every single time because their willpower, their need to push forward, has been proven to not be worthy by these people. So who's to not say that this person wouldn't be triggered by these events to the point of being depressed? Because you're doing everything that you could possibly do. You're believing in yourself. And also, it's a mode of survival as well. Because you're not just doing this for the sake of doing it. You're doing it for an outcome. You're doing it for a reason. And when those outcomes and those reasons aren't being occupied by life showcasing that you can be fulfilled, you are naturally going to feel like you're worthless. Stress is by far the number one trigger for depression, due to stress naturally causing hormonal changes within the body, which ultimately disrupt the hormonal regulation of one's mood and emotions. So we all know how much stress can really disrupt our body to the point where when you should be happy about things, you're not. When you should be sad about things, you're not. Everything within you doesn't match the thoughts in your brain. The same way doesn't match your reality.
because all you're thinking about is how you could finish this. All you're thinking about is when you should sleep, how you should eat, because other things are taking away your time. Stress not only is a number one killer, but it is also a determining factor of how long someone can stay in a depressed mood. Because when your body gets so used to certain hormones existing within the bloodstream, it's harder to pull yourself out of something that's compressing you. Once again, depression's like compression. It's pulling you in. It's not allowing you to be in current present day reality. It's pulling you in. It's pulling you to the past. It's pulling you into all the reasons why you can't, you wouldn't, you shouldn't, and you're not enough of, or should, once again, do things. The diagnosis of illnesses can also cause depression within individuals, because the illness may cause trauma as well as be the reason for the symptoms. And let me reframe this again. So the diagnosis of an illness can also cause depression within an individual, because the act of diagnosing a person can cause internal trauma. It can also be the reason the person is experiencing depression to begin with, along with the medication that they're taking can also be an additional factor for the likelihood of them becoming depressed. Lack of sleep, as we all know, insomnia or hypersomnia, quite literally, is kind of why people even check in to the doctor's office and say, hey, something is wrong, I haven't been sleeping. And it's like, oh, maybe you're depressed. Or maybe it's SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And we know how important sleep is. And sometimes this can trigger depression, because the reason why you're not sleeping could be the reason you will fall into depression. Like for me, the reason why I fell into depression was because I was having so many anxious thoughts, thinking night and day about the same thing, sequences over and over and over again, to the point where I was literally exhausting myself. And I was having eye bags. I was slow moving. I wasn't eating that much. And I definitely was not sleeping. And that was also a factor of me going into the doctor. Because when you don't sleep, you're kind of on high alert all the time. Like, quite literally all the time. Yeah. So, rumination also can trigger depression, because it is the act of thinking hard and long about the possibilities of events, people, life, with no way of stopping these thoughts. They go on, and they tend to take up a life of their own in the mind. Rumination is an extension of grief, because it is an obsession with discovering the cause of pain events long after they have happened. Rumination can be best understood as self-pity, nihilism, existentialism, yes, sorry, I have braces, and overall a negative Debbie Danner attitude. Yeah, so that one is pretty self-explanatory. Rumination is pretty self-explanatory. One other thing that can trigger capitalism is... Not trigger capitalism, oh my god. Rewind! One other thing that can trigger depression is financial instability. So, yeah, capitalism. Capitalism, very much so, is a contributor to people experiencing depression and the worldwide discussion of mental health issues. Ooh! If you don't have a job and you can't get no money, financial aid ain't helping you. You wonder why you're sad. You wonder why you're using the little bit of money that you have to buy beer. You wonder. And I'm saying you wonder to people that judge people for being sad for having no money. We all know we deserve it. We all know the affirmations, beloveds. We do. But this is not the podcast for talking about affirmations. It's not. It's a podcast dedicated to talking about why certain people cannot think about these things in this context because of depression. Life transitions can also affect the mood negatively, even if a person receives positive news. The act of changing and going into unfamiliar ground can gravely bring stress to people. This type of reaction to lifelong changes refers to as adjustment disorder, where a person develops the symptoms of depression or even a full episode after these changes. So, for me, I firmly believe that part of the thing that triggered my depression was definitely the fact that I transitioned from high school to university. That is a life transition. Also, you changing friend groups, life transition. You changing a job, a major, life transition. You having a new sibling, life transition. Lastly, substance abuse and depression are closely related because the mental as well as the physical changes in depression as well as addiction are viewed quite similarly. In particular, they often can trigger one another, being that depression can cause one to seek a vice, whereas the withdrawal phase of a vice can cause depression. So this is pretty self-explanatory, which is substance abuse and depression go hand in hand. We cannot address one without addressing the other because they're dependent upon each other. So judge people less for going into drugs and judge the system more for why it's urging people to medicate themselves over the fact that they can't live optimally. The other thing that I'll be talking about is how emotions are often associated with depression. However, they can also be viewed as areas in life where people are just feeling things. So it does not make you necessarily depressed for experiencing these things, but it's important to talk about these things as a whole. So what I'll be talking about today is how sadness, disappointment, anger, envy, burnout, guilt, hopelessness, and anxiety are often confused with depression. So let me first talk about sadness. Sadness is often confused with depression because it is a symptom of depression. However, just like happiness, sadness comes and goes, and we have a variety of reasons as to why we even feel sadness to begin with. Such as, you could just wake up on the wrong side of the bed, back's hurting. Not only did you wake up with your back hurting, you woke up late. And you're just like, damn, why today? I already don't feel good. And I'm gonna be late. And the day goes more and more downhill. It was genuinely a bad day. However, people also get sad when they lose things, when they don't get what they want, when they are faced with tragedies, realities that they didn't want to face. These are all common human things. However, sadness should not be expressed as depression because in order for it to be felt, represented, or even documented as depression to begin with, you have to feel sad for more than 2 weeks by the criteria standards.
So, it's not right to feel like a bad day, bad week even, is the reason why you think you're depressed. Because not only do you need 2 weeks of this feeling, you also need a plethora of other criteria to even determine why you're sad. If this sadness has not taken you outside of what you, one, love to do, or two, need to do for survival's sake, then, beloved, this sadness that you're experiencing might just be a purge. It might just be a societal thing. It might be something that everybody in collective is feeling. And that's okay. The second bunch of emotions that I've actually coupled together, because I represent this criteria as the downer. Okay? So this downer criteria that I've created in how it's often confused with depression is because disappointment, guilt, and hopelessness are usually coupled together naturally. So the reason why I believe it's so is because disappointment occurs when a person is so unfulfilled by something and or someone they have hoped or expected the best from. On the opposite end, guilt is where a person feels bad for something because it feels wrong. The difference between disappointment and guilt is that disappointment showcases how a person would blame themselves for not being realistic enough or even carry out something they believed they could have. Whereas guilt, the person feels like they could have been more, what should I say? They wish they could take back the things that they've done. So with disappointment, it's more so, I expected too much. Guilt is more so, I should have done way less. I should have been more to myself. I should have not said anything. Why did I say something? Hopelessness, however, is a feeling of lacking hope, optimism, or even passion for the things in life that a person feels naturally called to. So as I said before with sadness, in order for sadness to be a criteria, it has to come with a couple of other things. I put sadness by itself and disappointment, guilt, and hopelessness in another criteria because, like, you don't naturally feel disappointed. You don't actually feel guilty. You don't actually feel hopeless unless you're already sad. You have to already feel sad to now be like, wow, I'm disappointed I didn't get this opportunity. Wow, I feel guilty because not only did I take this perception of what an opportunity is, but I think I harmed somebody in the process. Like, why did I do that? And then hopelessness is like, not only am I sad, there's nothing here for me on this earth. Like, what am I doing here? Like, why did I decide to come on this planet right now? Like, why didn't I decide to be a 1970s babe or something? I don't know. Like, why? Why am I here? I don't feel like I'm of use. I feel like I'm in a different era. Like, what is this? Like, literally hopelessness, guilt, and disappointment are downers because they further pull you in to why past actions are the reason why you're always gonna make future mistakes. And that's why you're always gonna be a terrible person. And this triangle that I just illustrated to you is how depression is viewed by a lot of therapists in being able to see where a person who's coming into them, the level of severity their depression's in. Like, do they show that they believe that nothing is going to ever work out, meaning they're thinking future tense, like they're very definite in thought. They believe everybody hates them, which is environmental, which is society-based, which is their ability to relate to other people. And then do they also believe that it's them that's the problem? And this is very personal. So these three criteria is environment, it's definite, never going to change, and you believe you're the person and you're the reason why you're never going to change. Like, all those things quite literally are the downing aspects of disappointment, guilt, and once again, hopelessness. So the next criteria that I have is anxiety, envy, and anger. And I want to put this in their own criteria because these are like the uppers. And I say uppers because they make you so active in your body. These emotions right here make you so active in your body to the point where you're just like, what the fuck? Why did this person do this to me? I can't believe it. Like, I have to do something about it. And the thing with that is that it could also look like this. Oh my God, why did they feel this way about me? Oh my God, what can I do to help this? What can I do to aid this? Oh my God, there's so many things that are outside of my control right now. There's so many things I'm trying to control. There's so many things. And then there's also envy. The first one I illustrated, the first one was anger. The second one was anxiety. And the third one is going to be envy. So with envy, it's more so like, I can't believe she has that and I don't. Like, what does she have that I don't have? I think I'm going to start stalking her. You know what? I'm going to get everything that she has so that I can live this life where I could be a better version of her. Not only that, I'm going to add my own personality to it. So it's not that close to her, but it's close enough because I like the lifestyle that she's living. And I'm dramatizing all these emotions right now because on an outside perspective, that's exactly how it looks to anybody listening. Like, anxiety demands so much of us because we're overthinking. And these overthinking thoughts are usually coming from you feeling guilty about something, you feeling hopeless about something to the point where you're finding all these ways why it's important for you not to live here anymore. Like, anxiety is an upper because it intensifies anything that you're feeling already. With anger, with the amount of power anger has within us, we know that the cost of being angry is going to lead to burnout. And I'll speak about burnout after this. But when you're angry about things and you don't express this anger or even do something about it to externalize it or even understand it on a deeper level where you're not going to injure anybody, with depression, you naturally go inward. You become angry at self. When you can't touch people, you touch yourself. And this is an upper because eventually you're going to get tired. You're going to get so tired of being angry that you are going to become depressed because you can't do anything about it. Haven't you known that a lot of depressed people tend to be angry people too? They're always mad about something. Always mad about living. Haven't you wondered that? So with envy now, a lot of the time, I would say, envy breeds in people because they're too sad about not getting something themselves. So they just find a way to twist it into they couldn't have it because someone else stole it. Like, envy for sure takes a lot of energy out of people. And it has a number on people's psyche to the point where people wouldn't know what they're living for anymore, which is basically what I mean by hopelessness. Like, people who complain about not being noticed but don't do anything about it, those are people that are probably envious, because if you're doing nothing about not being seen, you're not doing anything with your life, and there's not a defining reason as to you not going after these things, but you feel like there's a reason why you're believing this, you're definitely envious. It's also coming from a place of hopelessness because, once again, if you have a purpose in life, you wouldn't be sitting down being envious of anybody else because you're focused on that purpose. But when you're hopeless, you are most likely to develop envy. And once again, haven't you noticed that a lot of time depressed people are envious of other people's perceived happiness, despite the fact that we all literally go through life, all happy people go through life. That happy moment is a moment in time. A moment in time that could change at any second. And that's why it's important to stay present, because if you're present, you're not clinging on to the feeling of anything. So now I'm going to speak about burnout. And burnout is also confused with depression, because burnout is a prolonged state of exhaustion, which is often accompanied by prolonged stress. When you mix all these emotions in a salad, you can casually see how much... Okay, no. Let me make this simple. Burnout, in hindsight, is a prolonged state of exhaustion accompanied by prolonged stress. And when you're tired, like genuinely tired, no energy for nothing, you have no energy to even be happy about anything. You're almost on empty. What is there to be happy about? Everything you're doing right now is quite literally for your sake of survival. So is there to be happy right now? I can't even do the arts and crafts I want to do. I can't even go see my friends right now. I need to work to save my life for my future. I have to make sure that the house that I'm living in is getting paid for. What do you mean I need to sit down and try to be happy and be gracious and be thankful and have gratitude? I'm tired. That's what burnout feels like. That's what burnout even speaks like. When people are burnt out, they don't have time to be happy. And this is often confused with depression, because very much so, depressed people are tired. And a lot of the time, burnout most likely is a reason for a lot of people's episode returns. I personally haven't had an episode return because I have made it quite clear within myself that's important for me to care about my mental health. I cannot let myself get too off the rail. I can't. And I say I can't because I wouldn't. And I say I wouldn't because I have also made a promise within myself that I don't need to. Life will never ever be that deep for me to jeopardize my mental health again. It will never be that deep. It will never ever be that deep. And with saying that, the next thing I'm going to be talking about are the symptoms of depression and the associated behaviors. So, symptoms of depression goes as follows. Feeling and or having a depressed mood, less interest and pleasure in anything they used to enjoy, changes in appetite, either eating more or eating less, loss of energy or increased fatigue, increased purposelessness of physical events, such as talking slowly, inability to stand still, pacing, moving slowly. I want to kind of describe this one a little bit more. So with depression, people kind of move like zombies. And a lot of time is spent doing things to move like zombies. And you don't really have the urge to do anything that requires energy. So you might be okay with literally just walking around in your own room, but like every couple of hours. And when anybody asks of you, you literally be like, yeah, I'm good. Rather than be like, yeah, I'm good. Like, that's literally what depression does to people. It slows them down. They're literally, once again, being compressed. Depression compresses you. Feeling worthless or guilty, difficulty thinking or concentrating and or making decisions, thoughts of death or unalive thinking ruminations. So now, do you see why I said the previous emotions can be viewed as depression? However, they're also part of the criteria of defining depression. So, like, you can feel an emotion, and you could also have these emotions coupled up with depression. It's possible to have both. Two truths can exist. So, now I'm going to go on with the different types of depression. So, there's minor depression, SAD, seasonal affective disorder, major depression, situational depression, spiritual depression, smiling depression, and or persistent depressed disorder. So minor depression, SAD, or if you're doing the quiz questionnaire and it's less than every single day, then it's minor depression. Minor depression, in hindsight, once again, is just you feeling these emotions, but it's for a short period of time, whether it's seasonal or you're going through a hard time in life. Major depression is on the entire whole different spectrum, where it's every single day, almost every day, and it's also possibly coupled up with minor depression, which is SAD. So it's seasonal, and it's also quite heavy when you do experience it. Situational depression is when people experience moods of depression based upon an event happening, meaning like somebody died, one was put in an accident, and this accident caused them to be immobile for a couple months. You getting into a fight with your husband, and it results in you guys getting a divorce. Like, these are situations that can cause someone to go into this feeling of despair, feeling of agony, and it weighs on them. So the situation caused this in hindsight. So with spiritual depression, now this one I relate the most to, because outside of me saying that the life transitions is what pushed me to feel depression, I also feel like I was experiencing it on a spiritual level, meaning when you start to know more about things, more about stuff, more about you and what you need to change, you're going through a process of elevation. When you're able to admit certain things about yourself, you are naturally going to a place where you're just like, okay, I know way too much about myself that needs to change, and that's fucking sad. It's so sad that I got to this point so unaware. Like, that's literally how it feels. Like, you were so unaware to the point that you're aware, and all this information has rushed into you that you're just like, oh my god, I just have to sit with myself. That's how I felt when I was transitioning from high school to university, and like going into new social relationships, going into like a romantic relationship as well, and me trying to get a job and all those things, those life transitions. And then me learning all these things about myself through these people, through certain circumstances, through my own self as well. It's like all these things coupled up. It's like, ooh, I literally felt like I was dying. I felt like I was dying. Because like depression really does make you feel like you're already dead. So, simply put, spiritual depression is when you are literally going through a phase of transition within this earthly body and its integration with higher self, higher knowledge, and you are being compressed by it. You need to integrate it into your body. But a lot of the time, that comes with resistance. And depression kind of is that resistance. And when you're able to let go and let God and let Source do what it needs to do, you're able to integrate it, which is why it's called spiritual depression. You don't stay here. It's a moment in time. You're not staying here. It's all about you, the way you integrate all this information. Lastly, smiling depression, aka persistent depressed disorder. This is what people will call, I never knew that person was going to kill themselves. They look so happy. Smiling depression is this. This is what smiling depression is. When celebrities that look so happy end up killing themselves, this is why. This is why. Persistent depression disorder is when a person is able to be so attuned with all the things that they have to do. They have to go to work. They have to get the kids. They have to make some food. They gotta work out. They're able to do all these daily routines because they're high functioning. High functioning depressed people are smiling depressant people. They can do things and still have their mind going on over and over again, ruminating, doubting themselves, talking down on themselves. They can do it. They got the energy. They're literally being sustained by all the things that they're doing because they're able to balance it out. Smiling depression is truly the saddest because it's like you often wonder if people who experience the capacity to smile, who also experience the capacity to be happy sometimes. Because persistent depressive people have the capacity to be happy. It's just more so depression is persistent within them. And it's hard to watch until people like accept that within themselves, that sometimes experience depression is part of elevation a lot of the time. You have to go down before you go up. Because when you jump, you're pressing into the earth. You don't go up. You press into gravity, push up into outside of gravity. Push into gravity to push up outside of gravity. We're going against gravity. So you have to push down first, and then you go up. You have to go down before you go up. Yeah. So now I'm going to be speaking about the importance of labels. Quite interesting. So, why is being labeled? Why do you think being labeled as a depressed person will be any benefit to you in society? Well, it gets rid of the question of what is going on with you. When you know the cause of the issue, which is your mood, don't you think that now you could have the capacity to do something about it? Not only that, depression also brings understanding, meaning once you get a label, you can now research. And now that you can research, you can see in what ways is depression affecting you. Like, now that you know the different types of depression, you're probably now going to be able to see in what ways depression is affecting you. In what ways, what areas, how it's been affecting you, in what time period has it been affecting you? Is it still here? Is it trying to show up now? Do you know? Like now that you know and understand based upon research, right? Now, you can do something about it, which is what I'll talk about, which is the coping mechanisms. You can see the progress of you trying to live life. Because when you know through the labeling, you could then research based upon the label. And then now that you researched and you came to understand, now you're able to have a more comprehensive analysis of you just living now. Because when you know the answer to your question, now you could actually live. I don't think people realize this, but like, that day that I was diagnosed with depression, that was the happiest day of my life. Like, one of the happiest days of my life. Because I now had the access to do something about it. I could not then blame anybody else but myself for my ability to triumph, my ability to conquer, and my ability to know that my life is dictated to how I want to consistently feel. And this is not the mood that I want to feel ever. That was all the determination I need. The label was all the determination I needed to progress. Because naturally, people want the label as an excuse. I personally want the label to know more. So ask yourself, are you using the label of depression as an excuse to not want to change? Or are you using the label of depression as a reason as to why you're not the same person that you once were through change? Because I only talk about depression within the context of, like, I'm not there anymore. I don't talk about depression within the context that I'm planning or feeling like I'm going to get there again. Like, no. I'm pretty content with my life. And it's because I've designed it in such a way where that emotion wouldn't touch me in the same way ever again. So when you go about talking about depression, make sure that it's less an identity and more of what you go through. Because depression is what you go through. You're not a depressed person. You just go through depression from time to time. So now we're going to talk about the conversation of antidepressant usage. So I don't know why it's segued into that like that, but I'm just going to flow with it. So, I will say this. I was very thankful that, one, I had the access to even get pharmaceutical drugs, because Western drugs aren't necessarily bad. However, they're for need's sake. And I felt like this drug was need's sake for that time period. After those 3 days, I've been taking antidepressants within that year. And it was the last day of 2018 that I decided that... No, it wasn't 2018. It was 2019, the day before 2020. I decided that I wasn't going to be taking them anymore. I was deciding that I wasn't going to because something inside of me felt so disconnected from it. And I was even already trying to, like, wean myself off it. Like, I was taking, like, half, because at that point I was already taking full pills. So I started taking half and I was skipping, like, days. So I skipped a day. I just happened to smoke that day. And I literally felt like there was a zap in my brain. I'm just like, nah. There's no way. I just felt a zap in my brain. I was like, nope, I'm not taking these anymore. Nope. I just completely cut it out. And from that point forward, I just didn't, I wasn't on antidepressants anymore. Yeah. So now it's basically almost 2 years. Yeah, it's almost 2 years that I haven't been on antidepressants. And I'm truly thankful. However, I will say a couple things about antidepressants and why, beyond what I told you, isn't why I'm on them anymore, is because of these things. First of all, as I mentioned before, medication, at least westernized medication, beyond vitamins, are to be questioned in regards to our dependency on them. Because within that time period, I thought that utilizing this for the best outcome, which is my mood and me relearning things about myself and what I liked and the hobbies I wanted to do, all those things, like, that was justified. However, I also feel like it could also be perceived as an excuse, because dependency on any drug of any choice is merely a vice to what we can truly do for ourselves. And my stopping is proof of that. Me not taking it anymore is proof that I personally did not need it. And even within the severity of some people's depression, such as the persistent depression, right? There's other alternatives as to lessening these. And I also will talk about that later in the podcast. But there's definitely things such as lack of vitamins, things such as one not exercising as much, all these things that can contribute to your feeling of depression might not be intervened as much as people swear it is. But it's like the fact that you're going to the doctor and just like, hey, have you been exercising? It's like, no, not in the last 3 years. And it's like, oh, maybe you should exercise and see how your mood changes. You know, like things like that. Our dependency on doctors is questionable, and it's kind of sad that to a certain degree, some people aren't even depressed to begin with, and are just lacking healthy alternatives of what they need to do in their lives, you know? But outside of that, I also believe my view of antidepressants is quite neutral, along the regards that people with integrity will know that depending on anything to sustain their happiness, which is entirely dependent on them, is completely taking away from the agency that they have in controlling circumstances in their life. So, if momentarily you are in a place where you just cannot function without depression, without hold up. Without antidepressants, then it calls the question of whether people are using this pharmaceutical to the best purpose that they could use it for. Because it's one thing to blame people for wanting to go the route of antidepressants and staying on it. However, when you're searching up the side effects of using antidepressants, ironically, you don't really tend to wonder what happens afterwards, because you're not under the assumption that you're going to stop. To be honest, when I've gone on antidepressants, I actually didn't think too much about getting off of them. And that's a little concerning, because when you're that low, you will grasp onto anything and everything just to pull you up, and not having the capacity to think that forward it's kind of scary. But anywho, outside of me stopping antidepressants, when I first cut them cold turkey, I didn't experience anything for 6 months. Like, I didn't have any side effects beyond, like, sleep. I ironically did not even tell my doctor that I got off of them. And I just carried on with his recommendations. And when these symptoms officially hit, I was able to really see why they don't necessarily talk about you coming off of them, because you will get tics, you will get agitated, you will sometimes even express or experience depression again to a certain extent. All these things have the potentiality to come and wreak havoc on your life and on your awareness and on your perception. And because of that, I was lucky that I already had things instilled within my routine, within my habits, and me knowing what I could use outside of antidepressants so that I wouldn't be experiencing the brunt of this as much, I would say. But one thing that people need to know is, like, the physical changes in your body, which is probably weight gain, tics. Tics as in, like, how do I explain this? When your body tends to move without, like, your awareness or, like, even control at times. Like, it has its own way of, like, moving. And that's not in your control. And antidepressants can do that. But yeah, I believe that's all that I have to say in terms of the side effects and my experience with them and why I'm not on them. But in terms of alterations, I would say that certain things that helped me were skullcap, Valtarian root. By the way, I'm not really good at pronouncing stuff, so if you do listen to this and you're hearing, like, Annie, what's that, just message me, DM me, at me on Twitter, Instagram. I'll be putting that in the description of this podcast. However, yeah, I think I'm actually gonna just put them in the description instead, because it's better for it to just be there rather than me just saying it out loud. But just know, like, there's alternatives. There are. And there's also more studies on things and how they have the potentiality to cure depression. If you follow me on Instagram, you know exactly what the things that I'm talking about. The other thing that I want to talk about today is mental illness jokes and the memification of depression. First of all, jokes are necessary and they hold a weight in our ability to deepen our thought. However, we have gone so far into jokes that people not only label themselves, of course, but they've created personalities out of disorders that quite literally is inhibiting them lives and inhibiting their way of, you know, being happy. And the issue with these jokes are less about the reality that jokes hold truth, but more so people becoming complacent and relying on these jokes as a way of sustaining their identity. They are something. Depression allows them to be something. And within memes, I want to talk about this in another podcast. Memes have a life of their own. Memes serve purposes. They can brainwash you. They have the potentiality to do that. They hold information within them and have intentions of their own beyond the person looking at it. And because of this, identifying with such a thing, think of meme like a mirror. Every time you look at a meme, it has the potentiality to stick in your psyche because everything naturally sticks in the subconscious, because the subconscious is 95% of our conscious awareness a lot of the time. So it's soaking up everything. And if you're a person that is depressed, is aware of this, and maybe is trying to seek help, is trying to be better, is trying to work on things within themselves, one thing that I can say is identifying with memes does bring you comfort, yes, but it's not going to bring you anywhere that will actually make you comfortable enough to want to live. So identifying with things that don't make you or bring you joy, I should say, like, don't bring you any type of fulfillment in life, any type of passion or will, that's not something that you should keep up with. Because once again, memes have lives of their own and they have different intentions of their own. And people who create memes do have the potential to put energy into them. So that's also why posting affirmations of memes can uplift you and make you feel good, the same way a depression tweet might feel comfortable, but it's a harsh reality. It's a very harsh reality. Not only that, we need to talk about how low vibrational that viewing such information about self, especially in a joking manner, meaning like when you laugh, you're basically kind of consenting to a certain degree that what is funny is something that you want to partake in. I know that people nervously laugh. That's something that people do. It's a natural thing even. But the more you react in such a way about things, you're showing your body that you like that. Your reactions, your natural reactions that your subconscious rules 95% of the time, you need to be able to see wholeheartedly what fuels your need to laugh at things, you know? Because do you actually believe that you want to be depressed? Because part of believing is reacting towards things that we like or even dislike in a certain way. And if you're laughing at depression jokes all day long, in your bed, not really going outside seeing people, you have to ask yourself, is this actually a joke or is this actually a reality? And I know people will be like, I'm aware this is my reality, but it's like, sometimes depression is also delusion. A lot of the things that we're sad about might not even be real anymore. A lot of the time it's of the past. And memes help us live in certain dimensions, different realities. I think it's so funny how I said I wasn't going to say that much about this, but it's still going on. But point is, memes hold energy, and you don't want to feed your energy in things that aren't sustaining you. It's not healthy. So the last and final thing that I'll be talking about is healthy coping mechanisms. So some of the things that I've been able to do to combat depression goes as follows. Meditation, walking, waking up early, stretching, completing small tasks, speaking to friends, talking to a therapist, having hobbies, eating nutritious food, building a routine. I feel like there's more that I want to say. I've done a painting. I've risked and tried new things. I've traveled. I've written things. Staying present helps as well. Actually, no. Majority of healing is honestly staying present. That's a coping mechanism, staying present, because realistically, living here makes you want to look at everything, be scared of everything, almost judge everything, criticize everything, be fearful of things. But when you're present, you're able to actually see with your hands, touch, smell, hear, see, that everything in which you fear cannot happen unless what you're currently doing is dangerous. And if it's not, then what's the point of going to the past trying to calculate what's going on in the here and now and judge the here and now based on the past? We all know that triggers sometimes propel us back, but being present helps you create a future where the past moments don't even matter anymore. Depression really did teach me so much about the balance of being with myself and being around other people, because depression will really isolate you mentally to the point where people around you don't feel close. And that's very scary. It's very scary to feel like people around you aren't close, although they're right there. This actually isn't the last thing that I have to say. The last and final thing that I will be speaking about today is how to be a support system to a friend that is depressed. Firstly, we know our friends. We know exactly who they are. We know exactly what they can do. And we know this because we have been able to accustom ourselves to the type of person that we love to be around. Paying attention is surely a quality of friendship. Being present, surely a quality of friendship. So if we know our friends, we have the capacity to remind them who they are. Depression, quite literally, makes you forget who you are. Memory loss and depression, oh my gosh, that's such a real thing. You honestly forget that you were ever happy at one point. That's what depression can do to people. It'll make you forget. So we have a duty as friends of depressed people to make sure that our people are being reminded who they are. Not only that, within reminding them who they are, we need to be able to bring a balance between their thoughts and help them come back to reality. Because once again, depression quite literally feels like a delusion at times. and everything in which you believe is kind of being presented to you in reality, but not enough for it to be seen by others, if that makes sense. Like, what you deem as failure is not something that your friend will deem as failure. And that's because they're not criticizing themselves to the same degree that you are. And because that is the case, we have a responsibility to reassure them that what they're feeling is valid, because it is. It's definitely valid. However, what they cannot fix is what they shouldn't focus on. And they have a choice to ground themselves in what they could change in the present moment versus choosing to stay in the present moment within past thoughts, because that's a choice. But doing this in such a way that's graceful, because at the end of the day, people, once they become depressed, are easily attacked by criticism. They might be realists to a certain degree, however, they're highly sensitive to the criticism in which you will have about their mentality and their attitude towards life. Understand that being there is subjective to the person that you're dealing with. And it's important to ask the people around you how exactly they need you to show up. Because once again, being there is subjective. Some people need text messages. Some people need to see you. Some people need a phone call. At the end of the day, keeping in contact with somebody that is depressed is important, because not only are we setting boundaries within them showcasing to us what they need from us, but we're allowing them to be themselves and come to us when they're ready to. Meaning, we know what to do when our friend is going through something. So our boundary is doing something that they ask us rather than doing anything that's not what they ask us. So if my friend needs a phone call and I know she's going through something, I will request or suggest or basically ask her, like, hey, can I check in for a phone call? Rather than one, calling her without her consent, or even two, doing more than that, like showing up at her house. Like, doing what people ask of you is highly important. But also, please understand too that once you know your friend. So if you know your friend, it's highly important that sometimes the things that they'll ask of us isn't within the saneness of their mind. So because we know them, you need to use your intuition and know that sometimes the things that they're asking of us to do is either the bare minimum or it's questionable to our inner knowing and inner knowledge of who this person is. This is all that I have for this podcast, and I'm truly thankful for everybody that has been supporting me despite me not posting a podcast in basically a year and some months. But I'm actually back and I have a lot to say. I'm in a new place in life currently where it's just me stepping into myself. So you're definitely going to be hearing more from me. I have not had a desire to run away in a long time, so that's a good sign. But anywho, thank you so much for listening to me. Please look at the description of this podcast to look at my Instagram, my Twitter, and my other Instagram account called Regime of Love, where I post parapsychology related things, and my Patreon. But thank you so much for listening to me once again, and I will be back for another podcast episode soon.